Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 120 for Friday, November 5th, 2010. This is the second of three episodes that I prepared and preloaded in Cambridge, Massachusetts before leaving on a trip to South Africa and Botswana with my wife, Darlene, and her sister. These preloaded episodes do not contain any news or comments, which will resume with TKC 122 on Friday, November 19th. For this show, what you will hear is an interview that I did with Ryan Block, founder of GDGT, a consumer electronics media startup, which held a big Boston bash that I attended on September 22nd. I will also in this episode include the first part of a presentation which I gave at PodCamp Boston 5 3 days later after the GDGT event on September 25th. My talk was titled Paging Ahead, Tips and Tools for Ebook Mastery. Episode 121 will bring you the conclusion of that talk that I gave at PodCamp. Before I turn to the Ryan Block interview, I want to pass along a tech tip from listener Wayne Scott, who recently emailed me as follows. I have had a Kindle 3 for a month now and am really enjoying it, but I keep needing to carry around my iPod for podcasts like yours. From the documentation, it appears that the audiobook player only supports Audible content, but from a hint on another website, I found that you can put any MP3 in the Audible directory, and it will appear as an audio item on the home screen. Then podcasts can be played, and the Kindle will save your place and allow you to resume at will. Also, by adding an .is_audio_player file to the root of the Kindle, my Linux machines will automatically treat the Kindle as an MP3 player and sync podcasts whenever I connect. And he has a link to how to do that, which I'll include in the show notes. So thank you, Wayne, for that tip. I have not had a chance to try out the sync method, which you suggested, but it sounds great, and I hope to do so after we return from our trip. I've known that you could listen to MP3 files on the Kindle. It's not something I do myself, but if there's a way to actually sync a podcast like this one so that it appears on the Kindle with updated episodes whenever you plug the Kindle into your computer, that would truly be pretty fantastic. So I'll leave you the link, and if you want to try it and let me know how it works, you could send me an email at podchronicles@gmail.com. Turning now to my interview with Ryan Block. Ryan is a co-founder of GDGT, a consumer electronics media startup funded by True Ventures, Spark Capital, and BetaWorks, among others. He is also former editor and editor emeritus of the Peerless Engadget, a web magazine and network of sites that provides detailed, savvy coverage of consumer electronics and technology. Ryan has been quoted by the BBC, Business Week, Chicago Tribune, the New York Times, the Guardian, The Times, The Wall Street Journal, and now The Kindle Chronicles. He was named one of Forbes' 2007 Web Celeb 25, and back in 2006, when he was still with Engadget with Peter Rojas, they were both named among the Paper Mag Beautiful People 2006. That's a website at papermag.com, and I'll have a link so you can see the fun picture they had for that distinction. Ryan still looks pretty good 4 years later. He currently lives in San Francisco with his better half, Veronica Belmont, and they have two cats. He was a very busy host with Peter at the GTDT open house in Boston, so I appreciated his willingness to step away from the noisy main room at the Royal Hotel on Tremont Street. He began by explaining a little bit more about the event.
Well, we have this show called Gadget Live in City, name here, and so we've been taking it around the country. This actually came out of our launch events that we did last year when we launched the site. We did one in New York and one in San Francisco, and we thought that they were so fun and they were so well attended that we decided to actually take them on the road.
So Boston's a pretty good tech spot.
Yeah, I've done events in Boston, I want to say one or two times before with Engadget. And we always had a really good time in Boston, and it was just a natural fit. And obviously, outside Silicon Valley, Boston is infamous for its tech scene. So, this is there was never a question. Boston was always on the list.
That's good. Well, now I want to talk about ebooks. How long before the Kindle came out had you been following ebooks yourself?
Basically since the Ian Corporation, developed electrophoretic displays, I'd been really interested. And the first Sony e-reader, the Libri, I think it was. Obviously a lot of gadget nerds like me were pretty interested in it. Even if we didn't have one, we were pretty interested in it. So basically since they first started coming out. You may or may not remember, I was actually the first person anywhere to break the news that the Kindle existed. I had the first photographs of the Kindle.
Yeah, I saw that. Now, can you say now how you got that?
Well, it wasn't hard. It was in the FCC database, and most consumer electronics companies that have never dealt with the FCC before don't know about all the confidentiality clauses that you could put into place so you can submit your product to the FCC but still have it kept confidential. Amazon happened not to have done that at the time, so I was looking through the FCC, as I would every single day, looking for products, and I saw something from Amazon, and I was blown away because that meant that Amazon had its name on a wireless product, and, that obviously doesn't happen very often. So, I looked it up, and I saw there was this product. It was called the Kindle. It was an ebook reader. You didn't really know anything else about it, except that it had, wireless radios of some kind. And I believe that was actually, about a year to
a year. More than a year, because you wrote about it in 2006.
Yeah, it was, a year to a year and a half before they actually launched it. And then I was at the launch event, too. And
how about the photo? Where did you get the photo in 2006?
That was in the listing.
It was in the filing?
The FCC takes photographs of all of the products that they test.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was there.
So you were live blogging the debut in 2007, and you came out pretty strong saying that this was going to change the way we read. If you knew then what you know now, would have you been even stronger in your assessment of it? Do you think you got it about right 3 years ago?
I don't really remember what I said 3 years ago or four, however many years ago it was. So I'm glad that that you seem to think that that I nailed it.
Oh yeah, look, I get the quote here. You said, if the Kindle's launch feels at all to you like the act of reading has just turned a major corner, we're on the same page.
So.
Well,
that was pretty close.
I had some good literary allusions in there, turning the page, it did feel, because the component that was really missing in all the ebook readers prior to that was the content, was the store. The iTunes to the iPod. As the iPod was to iTunes, there was no iTunes to the other Kindle, to the other ebook readers. When the Kindle came out, they had a very, very simple and compelling story. One, biggest bookseller in America, and some might argue many countries in the world. They had, simple, no plan downloading over 3G wireless, so anywhere Sprint's network was, through WhisperNet. And they didn't charge money for the plan, they only charged for the books, and the books were priced reasonably. And with those things put together, although the device certainly costed more than I think a lot of people were willing to pay for, those devices come down in price with time, and it's really hard to see with everything else moving digital, books not eventually going there. So it certainly made sense, and obviously I think the Kindle third gen, where it is today, is really kind of epitomizes what an ebook reader, as we know it, with electrophoretic display, should be. It's incredibly light, incredibly small, super cheap, and does everything you need it to do.
Now there's a question at GDGT about how much are you shifting reading from the iPad to the Kindle, because the Kindle looked pretty great to you. So what's it look like between the Kindle and the iPad for you in terms of your reading?
So I have to admit that I've switched completely over to the iPad. I got the Kindle third gen. I really like it a lot. I think it's great. But I do all my reading on the iPad now. When the iPad was first announced, I actually came out of the announcement event, and I think I tweeted something like, or I may have posted it on the site, something like, I felt really good about the Kindle. I felt like they were properly differentiated, that the iPad would be good for some things and the Kindle would be good for reading, and that's okay, right? Like, you might have a phone and you might have an iPod, and they're different. As it turns out, there's actually some stuff that the iPad does that the Kindle can't, namely its backlit screen, which is, I think, a huge bonus. I like to read in bed a lot, so that's really, really important to me. And then I really underestimated what having a touchscreen, how much that would help my reading. in terms of, you know, I lie in bed and, you know, I can turn pages without having to climb up the side of the device to hit the button. And, you know, I mean, frankly, the iPad has book content from Kindle, iBooks, Nook, and, you know, a couple of other providers now, and Kindle has Kindle. And although I still do read all my books through the Kindle app, it's nice to have that option.
So have you compared the iBooks app with the Kindle app and settled on the Kindle app as better on your iPad?
I have. It wasn't really an easy decision, and they're both pretty good, but the thing that I actually really like more about the Kindle app is how minimal it is. There's basically the only thing that's really on the page is the words. And I don't want, like, an illustration of pages and, like, the book binding and, you know, the title and all that stuff. I don't need any of that. I just, you know, all I want is the words in as simple a format as possible because that's what I'm reading. So that's what Kindle got really right on the iPad.
And you don't read too much outdoors, I guess.
No, I don't. I don't read very much outdoors. I can guarantee you if there's a vacation trip or something coming up where I'm going to some remote tropical island, I will be taking the Kindle with me.
What did you make of that ad that Amazon put out sort of saying na-na-na-na to the iPad when the girl in the by the pool?
It's really smart. I mean, you know, there are only a few things that the Kindle can do, and so you got to play to those. You got to play to those advantages. You know, like I said, it's much smaller, it's much cheaper, and it reads really nicely in terms of just reading books. So those are the things you want to emphasize. I mean, it's not a portable computer, right? It's not something you're going to use to check your email, and that's okay.
Have you had a chance to check out the new Sony Reader, the PRS350 with the touchscreen?
Let me think. I think I was at the launch of that one. I wasn't too impressed. Yeah, I mean, it's okay.
No wireless.
I mean, they still haven't really figured out the store side. I mean, I know that they have a store, but it's not fantastic. And yeah, they haven't made it as dead simple as Amazon has.
Have you seen anything in official filings that tells you what's ahead for the Nook? Is there going to be a new Nook out soon?
I would imagine there will be. I haven't been looking at the FCC since I left Engadget, so I have no idea what's actually coming. I did have mixed feelings about the Nook, though. I mean, I think it's a good device, but it's just a little bit too big, and the touchscreen I thought had some potential, but the screen wasn't that fantastic, and it felt a little bit sluggish, so... You know, I would say the Nook kind of places a distant third right now.
Well, now, I was joined your site and was trying to find Kindle information at GDGT. Tell me how that works. So I'm a passionate user of ebooks. What am I going to get at GDGT that I won't get anywhere else on the internet?
Well, I mean, this is a question you could answer, you could ask about basically any product. I mean, the way that the site is structured is communities of people kind of form around individual products or you know, multiple products as you own them. So you would add it to your want list or to your have list or to your had list. And then, of course, depending on your ownership status, you're going to see a stream of content about that product. So as people are adding discussions or they're asking questions, or if you want the new Kindle but you don't own it, you're going to see reviews that people are writing. So you're going to get stuff from other users based on the products that you have on your lists.
And you could have a portfolio. You'd be interested in the Kindle and the iPad and anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have hundreds of products on my list.
If you were designing the next Kindle, what would it look like?
I think we already know what the future of Kindle is, and that's software. Ultimately, ebook readers are not going to be around forever. Electrophoretic displays, I think that there's a limitation on the technology there. Color ebook readers look interesting, but you know, color LCD has had 40 years of technological development behind it, and electrophoretic displays are still very, very young. So, you know, I think if I were Amazon and I was deciding what the fourth gen Kindle would look like, probably look very similar, but if I was trying to think about what the Kindle is going to look like in 10 years, it's going to be a software experience.
Do you think that Amazon has to come out with an iPad competitor to protect its other media from just totally being owned by the iPad?
Oh, I think that Amazon's interest is in selling books and not in selling hardware. So hardware is certainly a way for them to sell books right now, but it is not the only way for them to sell books right now. If it was, then they wouldn't be on any other platforms. So it's a means to an end. I think that they're doing a really good job of it right now. I think they're, you know, they're making hay as while the sun shines, as the phrase goes. But I don't think that ultimately there's a future in that for them. And I think that they're probably smart enough to know that it's going to take a lot more than just a little bit of experience in the ebook reader market to create what is basically a portable computer.
Great. Thanks a lot, Ryan.
Thanks.
There was a huge crowd at that event that GDGT had in Boston, hundreds of people and lots of tech companies displaying their wares, and a pretty lively event. If you're not familiar with GDGT.com, you can go there. That's a way of people are sharing information about tech passions, and a lot of information being shared. If you do a search on Kindle, you'll come up with a lot of current discussions and information going on, and it's a real worthwhile site. For content on this episode, I want to talk about a book which is available as I'm recording before the trip. It's available for pre-order and delivery on November 9th, and it is Decision Points, the memoir by former President George W. Bush. It will be delivered to Kindle and related apps. I found it laudable that at least at the time when I pre-ordered the book today, on October 13th, the price was set by Crown at $9.99 for the regular Kindle edition, as well as for the deluxe ebook edition that contains everything in the regular Kindle edition and the hardcover, I assume, plus videos from defining moments of the presidency, including George Bush's Ground Zero speech to the 9/11 rescue workers, intimate family home movies, and a special introduction to the edition from the president himself. It also contains full text of some of his speeches, including addresses about 9/11, Afghanistan and Iraq, and his second inaugural. Also handwritten letters from the president's personal correspondence and more than 50 photos not contained in the print version of Decision Points. So those items will be available if you have an iPad, iPhone, iPod Touch, or the other mobile devices, as well as Kindle for PC or Mac. They won't, of course, appear on the Kindle devices themselves with the e-ink screen. By comparison to the $9.99 price for the ebook versions, Amazon listed the hardcover price for Decision Points at $18.90. I won't have my iPad with me in Africa, but I will be traveling with a Dell Inspiron mini netbook computer, which I purchased secondhand with the Mac OS 10 software installed, so I will be able to check out the deluxe ebook features using Kindle for Mac on that machine, which is the nickname for one of those, I guess, is a Hackintosh. It seems to be working pretty well. It's able to buy it for $225. So if something happens to it, I'm going to be a lot less upset than if I'm parted from my iPad, never mind my MacBook Pro. So I hope that $9.99 price stays in effect. So you've still got, when this episode comes out, you'll still have 4 days to pre-order it if you're interested. And that's looks like a pretty robust use of the new audio and video capabilities that Amazon is making part of some of the ebooks that it's publishing. I'll round out this episode of the podcast with the first part of my talk at PodCamp Boston, which was, as I said, titled Paging Ahead, Tips for Ebook Mastery. I think we had about 50 people in the room, and the PodCamp in general was really excellent, a well-organized 2 days of very informal sessions, and of course, there's the rule of 2 feet. People can get up and leave whenever they want, and Christopher Penn, Chris Brogan, the other organizers of PodCamp have really refined the method, and it's a very useful way to spend some time at a very reasonable cost. I think the registration this year was something like $50. So I've done a little light editing of this section to try to make it flow, and hope you'll be able to hear some of the questions that were asked by the audience. It's, of course, a little echoey since it was in a big room and I was using my Olympus recorder to chronicle it, but it might be something that you'll find interesting, kind of an overview of things that I've been following here on the podcast and presenting to an audience of, you know, people pretty tech savvy, but not necessarily following the ebook phenomenon as closely as all of you are who are listeners to the podcast.
My name is Len Edgerly, and this is Paging Ahead, Tips and Tools for Ebook Mastery. And I'd like to start out curious, how many of you have a Kindle or another ebook that you're using now?
Okay, maybe about two-thirds.
How many of you are thinking of getting an ebook and haven't quite done it yet?
Okay,
great.
Do they know that iPhones count?
iPhones count, right? You can read any book on your iPhone. So if you've got a smartphone or an Android phone, you can be reading ebooks as well. I put all the topics
that I'm going to talk about here on a post at my blog, which is simply lenedgerly.com. And I'm going to walk you through. First, I'm going to cover ideas for finding content for your ebook. It doesn't all have to be purchased at the Amazon store if you're using a Kindle. And then I'm going to talk about two specific tools that a lot of people using ebooks get a lot out of. One of them is Caliber, and that's an ebook library management program. The other is Instapaper, which helps you to bring content from the web to your ebook. Then I'm going to shift at the end to talking about the effect ebooks is having on authors finding audiences, particularly independent authors. And I'm going to talk about a couple who, one who's had tremendous success, J.A. Conrad, and then another who I've interviewed, Staten Rabin, who wrote a book about Buddy Holly. So, to start out,
this is on your blog and available to us?
Yep.
Just go to
lenedgerly.com, and I don't post that often, so it'll be the top item for a while.
Okay, great. And the other question is, I don't have a Kindle, I have an iPad, and I use it thusly.
Perfect.
Same thing.
Yeah. The Kindle app for the iPad is pretty well done. The first version of it was a little weak, but now you can highlight, search, do this other stuff. The Kindle for Android app has recently been updated with a very interesting new feature. Apparently, if you've got a smartphone with Android and you're using that new app, you can merely speak a word, and it will look for that word throughout your book, or you can have it go out onto Wikipedia or Google. And this answers a mystery for the new Kindle, the Kindle 3, which just came out this summer. It has a microphone. And people say, why is there a microphone in a Kindle? And so I think you can kind of connect the dots and say, if the capability of this Android app is brought over to the Kindle, you'll be able to be reading along in your Kindle, and you'll say, Kindle, find Susan Carr, if that's a character in the book, and you forget, well, who's this character? And it'll bring up all the places where Susan Carr is mentioned in the book. But I can't wait to try it, and... Do any of you have an Android, Kindle for Android app that you've tried the new one yet? Have you tried the voice search? Does it work?
Yeah, it works. All the voice stuff works well on the Android. Yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous. So anyway, kind of neat that it came to Android first before the iPhone. Usually the iPhones get everything first, but not so in this case. So the Kindle Store. One of the advantages of the Kindle is that at this point there are over 700,000 titles at the Kindle store. So if you just go to amazon.com/Kindle, you're obviously get a chance to buy one, and then you're searching here for books. Now, that 700,000 books includes, I think, tens of thousands of free books that are basically ported over from Project Gutenberg, other public domain material. So if you want your Dickens or your Melville and different books that are available, you can get them within Amazon for free. And the advantage of that is that the Amazon infrastructure is a lot more robust than the competitors. Sure, yeah, question. What about other Creative Commons work? You can basically anything that's in a PDF format, so say you've got an article that is in PDF format, you can simply drag it onto the Kindle, connecting the Kindle by USB. You can also do these kinds of conversions and transport to the Kindle wirelessly. You can email it to Amazon and they'll send it over the wireless connection to your Kindle that way. They charge you 15 cents a megabyte to do that. For students, there's been a real kind of a neat story. There's a high school in Clearwater, Florida, just across the bay from Tampa. And just this week, they had 2,200 Kindles show up
one for each student at the high school. And it's the first school in the country, first high school in the country to give every single student a Kindle. And they are loading those textbooks onto the Kindles. It's kind of a neat story because it's not a real high-end school. It's not a real low-end. It's just an average school where a number of students don't have internet at home. So because they got the 3G version, they now are going to be able to get onto the internet using the 3G, their cell phone signal, and they have some kind of a system where they can go in and check their grades, get their assignments. They've got like a school system that is now lives on the internet, but then they can also get
it.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be carrying something like this instead of a book. Yeah.
The availability in the developing world.
You know, there's a program started by a guy that was a Microsoft executive. He's doing exactly that. The idea is to raise serious amounts of money. They've got a pilot school in Ghana and bring them in to very rural situations because there's pretty good cell phone coverage in all these places. So they can download books, and instead of getting books that were donated by missionaries about the history of Utah in the 1800s, there's all this sort of printed books that get shunted over to the developing world. They can be downloading books, you know, maybe authors from their country, or you know, just really good stuff. So it's a really exciting development, and I think it's going to go somewhere because it's got real high power people behind it. Yeah.
Can I just mention one major limitation of the Kindle?
Sure.
I speak as a Kindle user. Kindles only deal with their own Amazon DRM. Digital rights management software. And so the Kindle is the only ebook reader device that can't be used with the free content that you can download from your public library. And Boston and many, many other cities and suburban communities and so on, statewide contracts, are working with a service to provide downloadable ebooks. And they work great on the Sony and they work great on the Kobo and
right.
on all kinds of other devices, but they won't work on the Kindle. And that's a, you know, for some people, it's almost worth buying a second device to use the library content because it adds up all the books.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. There is a way to hack the Kindle to get, you have to create some kind of a PIN number. It's particularly easy for the Mac. I've done it, and I've downloaded books from the Denver Public Library and Boston Public Library to my Kindle. It's not easy, and it's much easier.
And it may be violating things that librarians don't want to help people violate.
Exactly.
But that's
a definite advantage. You know, you'll hear about the issue here is there is a format called EPUB, generated by kind of an effort to bring some order to standards on the internet, and it's adopted by everybody except Amazon. Amazon having been the one to sort of really get this ebook thing off the ground with the Kindle, has a format that was built in an earlier format, Mobi, and then they added DRM to it because there has to be DRM because of the publishers. The publishers demand the ability to say, if we sell this ebook, we don't want this person to simply, you know, make free copies of it available to 1,000 of their friends. And so there's that struggle about DRM for content. And so a lot of those limits are put on all of the ebook sellers, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and everyone else, by the publishers. At this point, 70%, possibly higher, but at least 70% of all the ebooks that are purchased for the Kindle. And of the remaining 30%, I would guess probably half of that is PDF, so that what the EPUB format accounts for at this point is probably 10 or 15% of all ebooks. So the idea that this is, you know, a developing standard that's going to completely define ebooks, I think doesn't really match up with the arithmetic at this point. What I have always hoped would happen is that in some future version of the Kindle, they would say, look, if you have an EPUB document that you downloaded from Google Books or somewhere else that's DRM free, you just drag it on your Kindle and you can read it the way you read a PDF and everything else. I don't see why they don't do that. And I have a feeling at some point they will. The other thing to know about the EPUB and the other books is if you have a Sony reader,
And I'm going to pass these around as I talk about them. I just make sure I get them all back. This is a Sony Reader Pocket Edition. This is the PRS 300, and this is the latest Sony Reader Pocket Edition. It's the PRS 350. This has a touch screen. It's a really beautiful engineering that's gone into it because you can just touch the screen and make things happen. It's a much clearer screen than the earlier Sony. If you buy a book at the Sony store, which has much less to choose from and it's generally more expensive than the Kindle store, you can read it on your Sony Reader, and using an Adobe program called Adobe Digital Editions, I think, you can move it onto your Kobo, and that's the e-reader that is it's a partnership that Borders is part of out of Canada. A nice device, kind of a playful design with a big blue button to move it around. And so you can move it on your Kobo, and then you can move it onto your Nook, which is the Barnes & Noble e-reader, and no problems. You could move it on your Kindle. So there you have that limit of the EPUB format. Now, one thing you won't hear too much about from Barnes & Noble is if you buy a book for the Nook on Barnes & Noble, you can't move it to the Kobo or the Sony Reader, because although they have EPUB, the digital rights management software doesn't talk to each other. So there are some limits on that. In terms of how these are stacking up, the Kindle, particularly with this new one that came out, is accounting for probably 2/3 of all sales of ebooks. This is on the hardware. And by the end of this year, the estimate from Forrester Research is that there will be 5 million Kindles in use, and pretty strong growth after that. So you've got the Kindle with 2/3 of the hardware sales and 2/3 or higher probably of the e-book sales, the clear dominant force in the market. The next is probably the Sony. Actually, the Sony had this earlier than the Kindle by about a year. But the problem was it never really took off, and the thing which made the Kindle take off was, of course, the ability to buy a book wirelessly. Now, you're sitting somewhere and someone mentions a book, you say, oh, I guess I'll buy that book, and then 60 seconds later, it's on your Kindle. That was where the Sony just started being totally left behind. It's still an important part of the market. From what I've heard from Forrester, they're saying that the Nook is gaining on the Sony, and probably by the end of the year, you might see the Nook in second place in terms of the number of units sold, followed by the Sony. And the big advantage that Barnes & Noble has that they're really taking advantage of is the connection with physical stores. I mean, it's kind of cool. You get your Nook wired up and you walk into a Barnes & Noble, it finds the Wi-Fi, and then early on it says, oh, I see you're here. Take this to get a free a muffin or something. And you can also read any book in the Barnes & Noble catalog while you're in the store for free for an hour. So those are kinds of things that Amazon can't do because they don't have physical stores. And it looks like it's giving Barnes & Noble a leg up on Sony, which really has never been in the book business. And so that's... Kobo, I think, is a real fun, lively player, really good marketing. Like the best emails from Kobo when they have new books offered and things like that. But at this point, it's a very small part of the market. This device, as well as the Sony's, although they're nice, they don't have that wireless. So the only way you can get content on these is you got to plug them into your computer after downloading the content from the website. It's not that hard to do, but it's nowhere near as fun and easy as the wireless. Yeah.
Has anybody found a decent way to put comic books on these things yet, or is that still a whirling spiral of purple suck?
I think it's, you know, these e-ink screens, I mean, there's no color.
Yeah.
I think probably the iPad is totally going to be the better platform for that. I think you can buy comics for...
Marvel has an app, yeah. No, but yeah. I mean, as far as publishing.
You mean publishing for e-books?
Well, like publishing graphic novels, that kind of thing? Like, are there tools for self-publishing at this point? Or is this just about consumption?
No, and I want to get to talking about authors. I would think some of the same tools would come into play as a regular book. It'd just be much more graphic. You'd be doing a lot of graphic images. The one thing which, when we get to the authors, I'll mention is you can, at this point, take a file, a Word document, put it through the digital text platform at Amazon for free, and within a day or two after it goes through some sort of vetting, your book is available to buy at Amazon.com for your Kindle. And it's very cool. I've done that. I did that for my notes for my MFA course, and it's up there. But what I did was I sent the file to a guy in Texas, Joshua Talent, and for, you know, an hourly fee, I think it ended up being maybe $60, he made a nice table of contents, he formatted it, he did all that. So I would say that for creating particularly a graphic novel, you'd want to hook up with somebody like Joshua Talent and say, you know, here's my materials, here are my files, and then get some probably more extensive help from him to make it look great. And he'd obviously want to maintain the color, because if it's a Kindle book, you won't be able to see the color on this, but you'll be able to see it on the iPad, the iPhone, all of the other the Kindle for PC and Mac.
So is there no, like, you know, graphic format standard other than like PDF right now?
I'm not sure. That's pretty much a words guy, so.
Okay. Words are easy.
Words are easy.
That I can do.
Okay. So I'm going to pass these around and just kind of go down the rows. We'll start. You'll be looking at two of the Sony readers. And these all have e-ink screens. So, you know, if you've seen the ad about the girl at the pool, you know she can read it in the sunlight. And the poor guy with the iPad, he's out of luck. And that's really true, by the way. When I first got my iPad, I went out in the sun, and it's nearly impossible to read it in direct sunlight.
But at least that guy can read comic books.
He can read comic books, yeah. He has his umbrella and a towel over his head. So. Now, there are one thing that I think is not known so much is that if you have a Kindle, you don't have to buy everything from the Amazon store. There are all kinds of places to buy books, find books that don't involve the Amazon store. I'll show you one here. It's if you go to freekindlebooks.org. This gives you this thing here, Magic Catalog of Project Gutenberg eBooks. Now, what you do is, if you have your Kindle hooked up to your computer, you download Magic Catalog of Project eBooks. So it now resides on your Kindle. You just do this once. And it gives you thousands of titles from Project Gutenberg that are on your Kindle. You can scroll through, you can search, you find them. And then when you find a book that you want, it'll come wirelessly to your Kindle without having to be attached to the computer. Yeah, Adam.
Man, we're going to break this if you don't tell us how to open it.
Okay. There we go. It's this little sleep button here. I think I had no thoughts about the content that I have on this thing, so I'm just, hell, you know, you're going to get a look at my life here. Adam?
This only works on an actual Kindle, right? It doesn't work with any of the apps or on a computer.
That's right. Let's see. I think that you could. This would open up on the app of the computer as well.
What's the URL? I'm trying to open it up right
now. Freekindlebooks.org. And then from there, you pick the Magic Catalog.
On my Kindle PC.
Yeah, I think she, if you open that, she can see that on her Kindle for PC app.
Okay, but you can't,
it's not just the
Kindle. But in terms of portable reading, you need to have a Kindle to do it with this search.
Freekindlebooks.org, you have to put that in the browser, not with the
computer. Right, right.
Like you wouldn't be able to activate this on
an iPhone?
Kindle for iPhone or Android or iPad.
I think that's right. So
from what I haven't played with it much, but most of the things that allow you to get non-Amazon content onto a Kindle really only work with a Kindle.
I see. Right? Okay. Yeah, I never tried using this with the iPhone. It does work with the Kindle for PC and Mac apps.
So that's a good source of content. Of course, I think a common experience of people that when I first got my Kindle nearly 3 years ago, I ended up reading a lot of classics that I'd kind of gone through the cliff notes for in school. And it's just kind of wonderful. I mean, you say, oh, yeah, that's a great book. And 60 seconds later, it's on the Kindle. And I sort of through that phase now, and now I'm reading more current books that I can find for one reason or another. There are some sites that you can buy books for the Kindle. One I really like here is called InkMesh. And InkMesh is a search of all the ebook platforms. So if you are looking for a book, you want to say, is this available for the Kindle? Is it available for the Sony Reader? You can check out, I'm going to try one that I just read recently, Common as Air by Lewis Hyde. And so what I'm seeing here when you pull this up, it shows that I can buy it at Amazon for $12.99, the Sony store for $12.99, and Kobo for the... This is a very handy way if you have more than one e-reader or you just want to see what's available to go, and then you can link through, of course, from here to purchase the book. So InkMesh.com is a pretty handy tool.
InkMesh.com is a book.
Excuse me?
For e-books.
It's kind of a Google for e-books. It helps you find e-books in all formats from all different e-book stores. And then you can compare, you can shop. Because sometimes you'll say, gee, it's $12.99 at Barnes & Noble, and it's only $9.99 at Amazon. So you get a chance to see where the cheapest place to buy your e-books is.
Okay. Another good place to go for science fiction books in particular is Bane, B-A-E-N. I didn't list that here, but
BAEN.com, I suspect. And they'll have books available in the format that can be read on the Kindle and the other formats. And fiction-wise is another. So the point is, for the Kindle, you can buy your books on Amazon if you want. There's some certain advantage to doing that. You can also buy books for the Kindle lots of other places.
As I said, I'll have the conclusion of my presentation at PodCamp in the next episode of the podcast, TKC 121, a week from today. And these sessions are good. I kind of have in mind the South by Southwest panel proposal, which I made with Joshua Talent, and I haven't heard back yet whether that was accepted as one of the panels that'll be at South by Southwest in March. We didn't get chosen in the first round, but the email that I received said that they're still considering as very competitive on the number of workshops that were proposed compared with the number that they'll be able to choose. But this session in Boston was a good chance to get a feel for what kind of a presentation I might make down in Austin if that happens. I've also sent in a proposal for the Tools of Change Publishing Conference that O'Reilly Media puts on in, I believe that's in January. So I really like doing these sessions, partly because I get to meet new people and people get to learn about the podcast, but I also find out things that I don't know. That there's one question in the passage that you just heard of Matthew Ebel, the musician, asking about comic books and is there a standard format. I just didn't know the answer to that, so it's the kind of thing that comes up that's good to step out from behind the microphone and have a chance to talk to people about the area that we're all interested here, of those of you that are following the podcast, and certainly that I am myself. If you would like to send me a message or a comment, just send it to podchronicles@gmail.com. You can also leave it at the show notes page at thekindlechronicles.com. Music for my podcast is Ramonk by Yuval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspective CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA Promonet. This is Len Edgerly from Cambridge, Massachusetts, pre-recording this episode of the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.